Hi, and welcome to the Virtual Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Ring, and I'm so glad you're here. In the Virtual Classroom, I invite virtual teachers from across the country to sit down and talk to all of us about what it's like to be a virtual teacher. It is my hope that through our conversations, we can educate, collaborate, and of course, connect to build a tribe of virtual teachers. Thanks again so much for being here. Hi, my beautiful virtual teaching community and guests. We're so happy that you're here. I don't know if you're aware of it, but this month is Mental Health Month. And I want to talk about that. I want to share my own story. And please bear with me. I'm not the best storyteller orally. I'm a better writer. But that takes time. And so I'm going to try to contain my ADHD and not chase so many squirrels while also sharing what I hope will be inspiring. Hopefully it will provide hope. And then also I hope that anyone who is struggling or anyone who knows someone that's struggling will be able to support them a little bit better or support yourself a little bit better. So here we go. I guess let's start with depression, which is what I struggled with. So what is it and what's it look like in people? So I'm going to list all of these, but just like with anything, you don't have to have all of them, but you should have a few of them for sure. But so some of these will be applicable for some they will not. So like trouble concentrating and remembering things and making decisions, fatigue. Feeling of guilt, worthlessness, and helplessness. That one's a pretty common one. Hopelessness. Insomnia, early morning wakefulness, or sleeping too much. So that can go either way. You can either not sleep at all or sleep too much. Irritability, restlessness, losing interest in things that you used to love, overeating, or appetite loss. Aches, pains, headaches, cramps that just won't go away. Digestive problems that just don't get better, even with treatment. Persistent sadness, anxiety, or empty feelings. And sometimes suicidal thoughts or attempts. So those are the symptoms. Again, you don't have to have all of those, but you should have like some. But let me talk to you about mine and how my depression started, how I treated it, and how I was able to get out of it. So mine started maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, kind of lost track, but I lived in depression for about 2 years. So definitely more than 3 years ago. My husband lost his job. He was a youth minister for a church, and this church was pretty special to us, at least to me, because I grew up in that church. I started attending it when I was like 13 years old, definitely eighth grade and 8th grade middle school years. I got saved there. I was baptized there. I made my best friends there. I met my husband because of this church. Like, this church was huge in backbone. It's one of the like foundational bones that hold me together. And when we got called to serve there, it was like a dream come true. It's everything I ever thought it would be. However, a few years in, every year around budget time, my husband's boss, the pastor, would write a negative review about Daryl, my husband. And I think it was just because he was afraid of budget cuts. Now looking back at it, because none of it was true. Daryl always wrote a rebuttal, and he has those. Daryl has those. He has those. He wrote a rebuttal back. And the pastor always said he was sorry that he was wrong, sorry that he even wrote it, and all that. And this happened like 3 years in a row, always around the same time. In fact, during the spring, like around this time, the year that my husband lost his job, he was like the final two of another. We were kind of sick of what was happening every year and putting that stress on our family. And my husband put his name in a couple of different churches, and he was like the final two. Like, they were about probably gonna call us down there for like a meeting, and like they normally do for those types of things. And right before that happened, my husband went to the pastor and was like, look, this, I'm tired of this and we're good right now, but I need to know we're going to stay good. And if we stay good, I'll pull my name out. If we're not, you know, I'm going to pursue this. So if you want me here, please tell me that you want me here. If you don't, it's fine. I'll move on. Well, the pastor was like, oh no, I definitely want you here. I'm so sorry for doing all those things in the past few years. It won't happen again. Well, he lied, obviously, or changed his mind or let greed. I don't know, because he then took those reviews when budget time came again, like in October, November, when they start thinking about those things, because we voted on it in like December. And, well, he turned them into the personnel committee and without Daryl's rebuttals and no mention of the rebuttals either. Because when Daryl brought them up during this spur of the moment meeting in November, they had no idea what he was talking about. They had never seen them and their mind was just already made up. They assumed Daryl had a poor work ethic, which was crazy. Because even though my husband didn't work 9 to 5, he worked like 11 to 9 because he's a youth minister. His kids are not available during school hours. And that was their main thing. They didn't like how he wasn't at the office from 9 to 5, but like a traditional, you know, whatever. However, it was okay for the pastor to leave at 2:30 and not come back. Like, that made no sense to me. But, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm still obviously upset about it. When I talk about it, it's still hurtful. It's still, it's crazy to me that this happened, because how much we poured ourselves into this church and into our students, and we didn't even get to say goodbye to them. There's still some that we never got to say goodbye to, or they never heard our side of the story. So they just thought we left them. So I hope, you know, as you listen to this, you're not thinking like, man, can we need to get over it? Because it wasn't just a job to us. These kids, these people were family. This church was a part of my backbone, part of my spine, part of my life. And for that to be just ripped from me, I'm still grieving it. And so please know and understand, it's not about forgiveness. It's about the loss. And because I do forgive him for this. Like, I forgive the pastor for this. And I wish him nothing but the best. I pray that God blesses his ministry and blesses him and pulls him and helps him repent for what he did. But at the same time, it doesn't change that what happened. And I am still grieving the loss of those relationships. And yeah, so anyway, when that happened, obviously we went through a depression. We were depressed, just like any kind of breakup you might have had in the past, like I mentioned before. But instead of just one person, it was like almost 50 to 100 kids. It was, and then our core, the ones we knew the best, the ones that we had for years, you know, that was a good solid 20 kids that we didn't really get to say goodbye to. And like, sorry, it's still just so painful to talk about and think about. And I hope I'm conveying that enough so you can understand why I slipped into my depression. Because my husband obviously was hurting because of these relationships, but he was also hurting because this was his job. This was his ministry. This was his life calling. And it shook him. It shook him in a way that you might think, like, am I supposed to be a teacher? Like, am I supposed to be a youth minister? Like, am I supposed to be doing this because of this happened? And just to be clear, in case any of you are out there that are Christians like us, if you're not, no judgment or anything like that, but you might understand that we might question God in this whole thing, but we never did. We never questioned him. We knew this was of man and not of him, because he is of all things good. And so we still gave him the glory and trusted him in all things, because we knew it was not him, and that this was of a man who just was worried about his paycheck being cut like 10 to 20%. But, you know, we then had to worry about. So my husband was depressed. And for whatever reason, I am that kind of person that if you see a spider and you're terrified, I'm going to pretend like you're a pansy and be strong and get rid of the spider. However, if you're strong and you're not scared of the spider, I'm going to be scared of the spider. I don't know why I'm like that. I just am. So, it is what it is. I just feel strong when other feels weak, and when people feel strong, then I think that allows me to be vulnerable and be able to feel weak. So that's what happened when Daryl was really upset. I felt like I needed to be strong. So I did. So I suppressed my depression to stay strong for my husband and our family. Started researching like WIC and food stamps and welfare and unemployment. And unfortunately, my husband couldn't qualify for unemployment because churches don't pay into unemployment. So he did not get that. So and we did not make enough to qualify for like food stamps and such, because teacher salaries are just above that. So there wasn't very many resources for us. Thankfully, we still made it through. Shout out to my dad for being so supportive, and we couldn't have done it without him. And Daryl's dad too. He helped us too, and just anybody else along the way. My best friend's husband is a saint and gave my husband a job, like almost immediately. And so we were so blessed in that respect. God really brought so many people into our lives to help us out, and I'm so thankful for that. And anyway, I suppress my grief though. I suppress my emotions. And because of that, I like hid them. It's like I forgot where I lost. It's like forgetting your keys. I could not remember where I put my grief. And so when Daryl was finally like strong, I guess, if you will, I couldn't pull them out to deal with them. And because of that, it was like I imploded. I just so depressed, and I experienced most of those symptoms that I mentioned earlier. My big ones were fatigue. I felt forever tired, even though I was working out all the time. I slept way too much. I was just constantly sleepy. I was irritable. I definitely lost interest in things that I love, but I'll talk more about that here in a second, because I also did the reverse. I became super interested in other things. I'll talk about those things in a minute. Eventually, I wasn't overeating in the beginning, but eventually my depression got so bad that I quit working out, which was something that I was doing all the time. And so eventually it caught up with me, and I gained several pounds back, and I'm working on that now. Thanks K-12 for providing like Weight Watchers and those types of things to motivate me, and appreciate that. So that's something, if you are a plug right there, if you're a K-12 employee, you can get Weight Watchers for a very cheap price. So something to look into if you're interested in that. But also I experienced obviously the sadness, anxiety. I didn't have very much anxiety. I'll talk more about that in a second. I felt empty and hopeless. I describe my depression as darkness. Like a cave, if you will. If you've ever watched a documentary of a cave and you've seen how dark they are, sometimes the depression felt so wide and like I couldn't find the walls. There was no point of reference. You just eventually just sat down and just was like, this is where I live now. In this dark cave, there's no getting out because I can't find the sides to get out, and there's no light. I don't know which way to go. And then other times the depression felt like a very tight cave, like you're stuck, you can't get out. You feel the walls, but they're so closed in that you can't move, like your foot's trapped, or your waist, you can't get through, like your hips get caught. So like something like that. And I never had suicidal thoughts, but I do have a healthy respect now for those who self-harm and those who do have suicidal thoughts. I get it. And I am not saying it's okay to have those thoughts, but please don't be rushed to judgy with those people if they ever express those to you. I want to just really convey that if they express that they're hurting themselves or that they want everything to end, they are in a place where it's so dark, where it feels so hurtful all the time, because as I mentioned, one of the symptoms is just aches, pains, headaches, and cramps that just won't go away. They are hurting, and ending it all just makes sense. It looks better. Grass is greener on the other side. So if they express that to you, please don't be judgmental. Please don't support it either, but just say, man, that's so hard. I'm so sorry you're feeling that way. Let's try to find some ways to get you some support. I would avoid the word help. Some support so you're not feeling that way, or we can lighten this burden or take away the pain as much as we can, because they're hurting. And so please just be aware of that. That's real to them. Okay. But so as I mentioned, I suppressed my depression, didn't know how to pull it back out. And I also just want to make you aware that some people are living in depression and have no idea they were in depression. I had no idea I was living in depression. So after my husband lost his job, we just thought this was who I am now, which made sense, you know, like I'm no longer a youth minister's wife. I'm questioning my whole identity. And so I'm just kind of empty and numb. I don't care about my husband. I'm irritable to him. I'm irritable to my son. I don't care about my son. I care about their well-being. Like I want them to be healthy and well, but I also come to a point where I want to just run away and disappear so they're better off without me. And maybe I can avoid this pain that I'm feeling if I just start all over. So it was twofold. Mainly, I just thought they would be better off without me. Thought the whole world would be better off without me. And so, fortunately, that didn't happen. Thankfully, I'm so glad that my husband was going through his master's degree, because as I mentioned, after he was let go, he immediately went back to college, like a couple months later when the new term started, and did a four-year program in two. And he is now a licensed counselor and practicing as a candidate. So you have to do a few years of like observation, like teachers did student teaching. Counselors have to do that. And so that's what he's doing right now. And during my time when I was depressed and didn't know it, he then went through a class that was all about depression. And they go a little bit deeper in that and give like some examples and things like that. And the whole time my husband's thinking, this is what Kim's going through right now. And so during this class, they talk about this depression inventory. I think it's called the Beck depression inventory. And then there's an anxiety one. It's basically like a quiz you would see in a magazine, you know, but it's for psychologists. So you ask them questions, they rate their score and on how they're feeling. And there's like, it's multiple choice. So, but each one is worth like different points. So you add up all the points and that determines how, or diagnoses you or whatever, how depressed you are. Well, my husband came home with this and was like, hey, Kim, I need to do this for an assignment. He didn't need to do it for an assignment, but he knew I was irritable with him. And I probably wouldn't have done it if it was just like, hey, I think you got this. So, but if I had to help him for school, that was different. I would help him with his school. And so, because I value education, obviously. So I took it and I was literally 1 point away from like clinical depression, like need to be in a hospital. And that really woke me up. No, like my depression having a name. And it's funny, since then I've heard people like naming their depression, making it like a person, like a frat boy. I've heard of a frat boy when their depression tells them to sleep and not do anything, if it's a frat boy, they're like, man, I'm not going to let a little frat boy tell me to sleep all day and I'm worthless. No. So it was kind of like that when I knew what I was going through wasn't just part of my personality now. it was treatable. There's a diagnosis. There's ways to get out of it. There's ways to help me feel less depressed, you know, and I can live a happier life. That in itself helped me so much. It gave it a name. And I think that in itself saved me. So my husband saved me from myself. And I'm so, so thankful for him. Words cannot convey how grateful I am. It's something you would like see in a movie with a prince saving the damsel. It's literally what I was. And I never want to be a damsel. But in that moment, I definitely was. And I'm so thankful that he didn't give up on me. I gave him an ulcer. We lived like this for a year, at least a year and a half, before realizing what was up with me. So, you know, like, he never gave up. And there was times when we talked about divorce and just talk, not actual like actions or whatever. I knew that I didn't want to give up. I knew that this was probably a season. It was like God's small voice was like, hey, this isn't forever. You'll get out of it. So don't make any rash decisions. And I'm so thankful for that. I'll probably say thankful a lot. So if you're wondering how many times I'll say it, but I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that I had that small voice that say, you know, don't give up. Don't do anything big. It's not forever. But at the same time, we couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that was hard. And so after that, so there are some treatments. So let's talk about those treatments of what to do if you are struggling with depression. So what I did was I immediately called a doctor, our family doctor, because although I'm not a big, huge believer in like medicine solves everything, my dad's a DO. So yes, medicine plays a role, but he's also, they're taught holistic, like plants and sunlight and meditation, prayer, all that. So I knew I was going to need some support medically to help me get out before like the rest of the stuff would be able to play a role, like counseling and coping skills and such. So I called my doctor, and we then, so my husband and my son came with me. And so we talked to the doctor all together about what I was feeling and what they were seeing. And so that was helpful. It gave a really good picture to the doctor. She prescribed some medication for me that I started taking. But at the same time, I also called a counselor. So I was using medication each day and then counseling once a week. And those things really helped me out because I was able to talk to an unbiased person about my frustrations with Daryl, because he didn't know I was depressed. He thought I was like running around and doing crazy stuff, because as I mentioned before, I did lose interest in them, but I also like threw myself into things that made me feel alive. So like every time we went to Colorado, I would go like snowboarding all day, like would go snowboarding at Breckenridge, like as soon as it opened. And when it closed at 4, I would hop in my car and go to Keystone and do night skiing. And wouldn't get back until like after it closed. And so I was just throwing myself into these other things. When I was at home, I would go to my local coffee shop and just hang out there. And just, I wanted to be away. I wanted to be away from people who held me accountable, who are causing me to be irritable. And all the while, it had nothing to do with them. It had everything to do with me. So there are some coping skills, and we should probably talk about those. And these are things you should do along with one or both of those, counseling or medication. So one of the first one is just breathing. There's lots of breathing techniques out there that you should definitely do. There's lots of research that as more oxygen gets into your body, not only will it help your white blood cells, but it also just helps your brain. And that's where your depression lives, is up there in your brain. So more air will help it be able to think more clearly. Another one is to And I know this sounds kind of counterproductive, but embrace the stress is another coping skill to do. View your stress as in constructive ways, as ways to help your body, help your mind, help you grow, and just having that positive mindset instead of being like, man, this is so, like when Daryl lost his job, that, you know, causing that stress, and we could have just hung out at home and, you know, lose our jobs, you know, whatever. But instead we found ways to grow. So my husband went back to work or back to school too, and back to work and got right back into it. So he embraced his stress and used it to help him grow, which is great. Some other ones, and I'll be just honest now at this point of what worked for me. So I started journaling. In the beginning, I went on Pinterest and found like some journal prompts for those who are struggling with depression. But eventually I started writing a novel. At the time I was a K-12 club leader for blogging, and most of my kids wrote fictional stories, and I wrote a lot of nonfiction. And they're like, how can you, not in a negative way or a rude way, they're like, how can you tell us to be writers and you've never written fiction? Like, and it was a valid question. So I was like, okay, well, I'll do that. And I talked to a friend, and he's like, Kim, just write one paragraph and see what happens. Well, that one paragraph turned into a novel. So now I'm avoiding the editing phases of it. I need to do that this summer. Really just dive into that and edit it and get it out there. And even if it's just one book on my shelf, I want to have it. And that in itself helped me a lot. So let me tell you what I wrote about. I wrote about a girl, my age, my personality, but was experiencing things that I always wanted to experience, like being an Olympic snowboarder. But she lost her husband. And so she was grieving that. And so we were both grieving at the same time and experiencing a lot of the same emotions and feelings. And it was incredible because I was able to see myself outside of myself. It was a very third person perspective. So I was helping her through her grief and she was helping me through mine. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for the people who encouraged me to write, and both my counselor, my husband, my K-12 club at the time, my friend, Corey, they all, and my best friends, they all encouraged me to write. My Facebook friends, they who are my friends, a lot of them are friends in real life, but I just don't see them very often. They all encouraged me, family, friends, and just thankful that they kept me going and kept me wanting to write, because there's times where I'm like, is this really helping? And it, in the end product, it was, because when my mom passed away, it was a big outlet for me to be able to pour more in of those feelings into her in a constructive way. Because many times we'll pour our feelings and take our feelings out of people we love because we love them and we hope they're strong enough. But be able to pour my feelings out into her was powerful, because I wasn't hurting her. She was feeling what I was feeling, and vice versa. But I also wasn't hurting anybody else around me, and was able to grieve with other people during that time instead of going numb again. And I also started counseling back up at that time too. And I'm thankful that I was able to do that. Because after a certain point, when you're going to counseling, they're like, okay, you know enough to be able to support yourself. I'm here if you need me. If you ever need to pop back in, just call me and we'll help you out. I'll help you out. But it's always the hope of a counselor to not just have clients for the rest of their lives, that they learn the skills to cope with everyday things. But like a death in the family, like your mother or a child, you know, those are big. And don't be afraid to go back to that support you need, like a counselor. So about a year ago, about a year ago at this point, my mom's been, she passed about a year and a half ago, almost that at this point when this is being recorded. So I took it about a year ago, and the same inventory, that back inventory. And this time I had a one which is basically like, girl, you good. You're not depressed. This is just, that's everyday life stresses. And I thought to myself how far I've come, how far I made it, and how I could have been, I could have gone down a different road of self-harm or let the darkness really consume me more and forget the small voice in my mind telling me that this is only short term in the long scheme of life, and could have gone a totally different way. My husband could have divorced me, and he had had every, like, not necessarily reason to, but I would have understood it. My family could have been torn apart. I could be in a ditch somewhere. I don't know. Like, anything could have gone anywhere. But instead, I had so many people looking out for me, even when we didn't know what was going on. So, if you're a teacher out there that's listening to this, I hope that you're seeking support. Don't be afraid to go see a counselor. There's nothing wrong with counselors. But make sure you find a good one, because just like with anything, like teachers, I'm sure you can think of one teacher that you would not want your kids to be taught, to have, you know, to be taught to. It's the same with counselors in any other profession, right? So ask around. Don't be afraid to ask around or research. There's like a journal, like a psychologist journal, and there's counselors in there, and people can rate them. And so don't be afraid to ask around. I want to just say that one more time. Don't be afraid to ask around. Find a good one. Find one that has experience. Find one that is maybe has experience with what you're going through. There's like one in my town that is a counselor for most of the people who have lost children. And so she's very talented and specialized, which is unfortunate, right? To be kind of being an expert of that. But at the same time, really thankful that there are people who are experts of that to help us out, right? Don't be afraid of medication. There's all kinds out there. So if one isn't working for you, don't make sure you have someone that's looking out for you, because unfortunately, some of the side effects actually make your depression worse. So be mindful of that, be aware of that, and be open and honest with your doctor up front, because that's going to help them find the right one for you. And make sure someone's looking out for you, so that way they can call your doctor and make an appointment for you to go back and get that fix for you and with you. And I hope just with all of this that you'll find some coping skills that work for you. Writing was the best one for me. And I think for most teachers, it would be a good outlet for them too. But there's so many out there. You can just Google coping skills and depression coping skills or anxiety coping skills. And so many will pop up. And just give them a go. They won't hurt you, right? So if they are positive and good and are productive, they're not gonna hurt, right? They just might be... It might just not be as high yielding as like some other interventions, right? But know that I am good now. This was a one season in my life, and I hope I never experience it again. And I now know the tools so I don't. So when I feel myself slipping into depression, I know that there's things that I can do. I can go write. I can go to the coffee shop and listen to music. I can talk to my husband. There's lots of things that I can go for a run. There's lots of things I can do now that I'm aware of that will help me. But if things get so bad, my counselor is on standby, and I can text her and make an appointment anytime. And I'm thankful that I know that that's there, because that in itself helps me out. And my husband, he's good. He's found a job that he really loves, and that had all the aspects of ministry that were his favorite, which were supporting and helping kids during their rough times in life. And so we found our callings, our true callings. And we still love God, for anyone that's interested in that. And we still love the church. And we realized that that was just one man in one church. And yes, I was shaken. And yes, I stumbled. But God pulled me out. And so thank you for listening to my story. thank you for supporting me and supporting other virtual teachers during this time. But if you're not struggling with depression right now, please keep these in the back of your mind, because at some point you might. I pray you don't, but you might. And if you know someone who is experiencing those things, reach out to them. You don't need to fix them. I want to say that. You don't need to fix them. My husband, who is a counselor now and was learning to be a counselor then, he knew that I needed to talk to someone else that would be non-biased, who would just listen to me, listen to my frustrations, let me dump things on them, and then help me see from different perspectives and help me find coping skills that worked for me. And I'm thankful for that, because then I could keep my relationship with Daryl as a husband-wife relationship. However, I will say I do love when he pulls his psychology out on me. So when I'm frustrated or with another aspect of my life, it's really helpful. But he doesn't pull it out near as often as I would hope. But it's for the sake of our marriage, because he's not my counselor. But I love it when he uses those like Jedi mind tricks on me, because it really helps me see from a different perspective. But anyway, my point is find, if you know someone who's struggling, reach out. Again, you don't need to fix them. My husband did save me, but he's the one that just pointed me in the right direction to find those supports and those interventions that I needed. So if you know someone, just be there. Be there for them. You don't need to fix them. You don't need to be their counselor. But they might just want to talk and vent. They might want to just be vulnerable. So just be a shoulder. Be an ear. You don't need to be a voice. But you might say something along the lines like, I'm always here for you. I'm so sorry you're going through this. This sounds so hard. I can't even begin to imagine. But you know, there's some things out there that are more qualified than me, that might be able to support you better, so you're not feeling this way so often. Would you like me to help you? Or if not, it's fine. But if there's anything that I can do to support you during this time, please let me know. I would love for you to not feel this way as often. And there are things out there that might be able to help you. And leave it to them. You know, they're human. They're not children. They're going to do what they want to do. But at least you did your part, right? They at least know that you're there. They feel loved because of it. And isn't that what it's all about? When you're feeling depressed and lonely, you're sad and feel hopeless, be the hope. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. I'm so thankful for this community. I hope this story helps you in some way, shape, or form. I hope it might be able to help someone else. And I don't normally like say, share this, you know, that's not who I am. But when it comes to things like this, the story might help. I know it has. I've shared my story so many times, and every time I share it, it helps. I'm told it helps them. And so if you don't have a story, but you know someone who might be struggling, you might send this to them. It might help them. If not, it didn't hurt them. They just lost like 40 minutes or whatever, however long this will be. But it's my hope that this story can help you as an educator, maybe help your future students, maybe help your future or future children. If they ever experience something like this, family, friends, whatever. And then ultimately you, I hope it helps you if you are in depression, or if you are in anxiety, or if you in the future are. You are beautiful. You are valid. You are important. You are so, so amazing. You're an incredible human being that deserves all the beauty and the good that this world has to offer. And know from the bottom of my heart, if you are suffering with depression, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what you're experiencing. I personally cannot begin to imagine what you are going through, because I know every situation is different. But it's my hope that you can reach out to somebody to provide those supports, those interventions that you need to feel better. Because this doesn't have to be. You do not have to be in this darkness. And maybe it's not complete darkness. Maybe it's just sunset or twilight and not like a full summer day. But wouldn't that still be better? Wouldn't any light be better? Again, as always, be brave. Take that risk for better. And as always, have fun. Thanks for listening. Bye.